The John Age Project.
Trust no one. Trust no one. Trust no one.
You found it. You're here. You're headlong down the runaway train that is the Anomic Age. I'm your host, John Age. It's a pleasure to be with you today on the program. We got a great guest coming up, none other than Mr. Carlos Zapata. Today, we're going to get into a little red, white, and blueprint and the work he's doing right now. Before we get into that, check out AnomicAge.com. Share the links, friends, family, loved ones, and enemies. Make sure you like all the likes, subscribe to all the subscriptions, and turn on the notifications. Other stuff, you can download the iPhone app, the Android app, sign up for the newsletter, that's all free. If you are so inclined, which I would really love it if you'd become a patron or just donate, become a sponsor to the show, because I'd love some new equipment, love to just pay the bills around here and not be in the red, so to speak. PayPal.me/Anomic Age, Patreon.com/Anomic Age as well. All that and so much more can be found on AnomicAge.com on the right side of your screen. All right, enough of that. Let's get into the real stuff, shall we? Hold on to your hats for just a mere matter of seconds. We'll be joined by our guest on the other side. I'm pleased to welcome into the Anomic Age Mr. Carlos Zapata. Carlos is a husband, father of four, graduate of Simpson University in Redding, California, Marine Corps officer and veteran of the Iraq War, black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He's also an entrepreneur as the owner of the Palomino Room in Red Bluff, California, and partner in West Coast Rodeo Company. Most recently, Carlos is the co-founder of Red, White, and Blueprint docuseries, which if you hadn't seen that, I highly recommend it. Carlos, thank you. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate you having me on.
And I'm so excited. I've talked to so many people around you. I'm so excited to talk to you finally. I've talked to, Oh man, I feel like, who the heck? I'm going to leave somebody out here. Terry Raposa and Mark Beard. And I feel like somebody else, but I could be mistaken. But nevertheless, I'm so happy to have you with us today. Thank you.
Yeah, Terry and Mark have really paved the way, you know, for what we're doing here, for the Patriot movement, for just the conservative movement in Northern California in general. Those are guys I respect a lot. So, yeah. And they spoke highly about you as well. So.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And thank them. So, man, yeah. This might be an odd place to start, but I was kind of pulled in this direction as I was kind of preparing for the show today. Mm-hmm. And I would add teacher to your list as well, because I was talking to Chuck Holton, I think, several weeks back, and we were getting into being a father and just that importance of instilling this in your children. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I only have one daughter here, but I think it's a common thread. I won't leave anybody out because I know there's some single people out there. There's some retired. There's old people. There's everybody in between. Yeah. But I think that's a common thread that kind of links a lot of folks like us together, is that once you have a child, you have that responsibility to imbue, you know, the morals, the fortitude, the pride, and these things into your children.
Sure.
And you have literal skin in the game, because it's not just about you anymore. You can't just sit back while Rome burns and say, oh, well, I've only got 30, 40 years left. Forget about it. Yeah. You know, It gives us all something to, you know, you got to talk to your daughters, talk to your sons and say, hey, this is the right way to be. This is what we have to do to be a man, to be a lady, you know, wives, teach your women, that sort of thing.
No, you're absolutely right, you know, and teacher is, to me, a very sacred role that we take on as parents. And kids are watching us. Yeah, I mean, I remember a long time ago that by the time a kid is three, they know your thoughts before you even speak them, you know, if they're around you. So they're watching every single thing you do, and they're picking up on every little nuance, every, you know, intricate detail. And so it's important, you know, that not only we live our lives, we conduct ourselves the way that we know we're being watched all the time, but to instill these values and have these verbal conversations. I think sometimes people think, oh, well, you know, they're just going to follow me, you know, along, and they're going to do what I do, you know, and think the way I think just because they're around me. And yeah, in a sense, they're right. But sometimes you have to sit down and have the difficult conversations. You have to have those awkward moments, you know, where you talk about the things that sometimes become the elephant in the room if left unsaid. And our kids, I think, are smart enough, they're intelligent enough to have these conversations, even at a young age. Because I'll tell you what, if you're not having these talks, there's other people that are. That they're going to be talking to your kids, especially if they're in school, in public school nowadays. And as we know, I mean, that's a brainwashing station now, to where the things that they're teaching our children at a very young age, I mean, poses a serious threat to us as parents, you know, who are trying to raise our kids with conservative, good values. And I mean, I'm sure you're on social media just as I am, and we're seeing what's coming out now where they're teaching five-year-old kids about, you know, male and female anatomy. What does a five-year-old need to know other than his or her own personal body for their own daily functions? What do they need to know about a grown man or a grown woman's anatomy? So it's this society now where everything's being sexualized. And to me, it's satanic. It really is what it is, in my opinion, where they're trying to education is not the right word. They're trying to brainwash your kids, to indoctrinate your kids at a very young age, so that by the time they're 12, 14, 15, you know, 18 years old, their thoughts are well formed in the ways of what I call the Maoist left. You know, so, and it's all perversion, right? It's all subversion and perversion. I mean, there's things happening now in schools that never happened when we were kids, but I'm sure our parents would have said the same thing about our generation, you know. But I think this generation is just so far gone at this point to where we need a serious remedy. We need a, you know, we need a serious inoculation, you know, of our values into society. And if we don't do it now, I mean, I don't think we're ever going to be able to retrieve what we want to have. So.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's a fact. I'm sure my audience is tired of me saying this, but I mean, K through 12 indoctrination, college, university weaponization. That's kind of the way I always sum it up. As what we're living through right now, and I'm trying to get out of that cult of academia without telling you too much on the air. I'll say it. I'm trying to get the heck out of that.
And it's a tough thing because we're products of that, right? I mean, when I was a kid, you had to go to school, you had to for sure graduate high school, and then you had to go to college. And if you didn't do that, you were just substandard, you know, in society's eyes. And we were told from the time we were kids, we were told you have to go to school or you're going to end up being a plumber. I'm like, well, shoot, a plumber makes a lot of money, you know, especially nowadays. You know, we're short on the trades. So I think this is all by design, right? I mean, this is all something that started about 60 years ago where the left, they were very smart. And they said, hey, we're going to create these, you know, these academic centers of indoctrination. And the more prestigious the university, the more, you know, far left they are, right? And So now we have these kids who have these school counselors from the time they're in junior high and then high school who are forcing them or telling them that they have to go to university in order to do anything with their lives, which is completely false. And we're seeing a big shift now. And I'm going to hold up my phone here, you know, as a symbol of this is what you need to master right here. You need to master this thing. If you're able to do this, if you're able to master, you know, social media in a way that's responsible, if you're able to market yourself on the web in a way that's responsible, you can do whatever you want in this life. You don't have to, you know, I mean, anything I ever want to know, I can get the answer right here. Obviously, this can be a weapon used against us or for us. But there's nothing that school's going to teach my kids that I can't, you know, responsibly learn on my phone, on Google, right? So where does that leave us, you know, as parents? You know, I mean, obviously, we don't want our kids stuck on the phone all day long on social media. But if we teach them how to responsibly, you know, access information, we can make them pretty smart. What I'm saying is that we need to teach our kids how to responsibly access information. Obviously, you know, don't let your kids run rampant on their phone. There's just too much information out there that's not good for them. But if they learn how to be responsible in the use of that tool, I think the sky's the limit. You can do anything you want these days, you know, without having to go through an indoctrination station. Academia, as you said,
I mean, I'm right there with you. I agree 110%. Like my mom was a high school teacher for 37 years. And I remember her telling me this some 20 plus years ago, where she was saying that they were taking out all the stuff like home ec, the stuff like they even had masonry, auto mechanics, carpentry, and stuff like that. They were taking all that out of the school system. And I didn't get it then, but now I do, because they don't want you to be an entrepreneur. They don't want you to be self-reliant or independent. And they want to demean those people that are. So they flipped the script, like you said. They've gotten everybody to believe that it's a bad idea to work with your hands. Those people are dumb and relegated to some sort of subclass. To really be the in crowd, you got to go to a big university and get your fancy degree and have other people tell you what you're supposed to be. It's funny.
And so much of that is parents who wrap their own self-worth, their own self-esteem around their kids' accomplishments, right? So they're the ones who want to sit around, you know, the barbecue bragging to their friends about how their kids go into Harvard or, you know, Columbia or anything like that. But at the end of the day, it's that kid that's going to be stuck with student loans that they can't write off. They're going to be stuck with an amount of debt that they'll never be able to get out from under. And that's a problem. We teach our kids financial responsibility from the time they're young. I mean, I wish they'd teach kids in grade school or junior high, at least, you know, how to manage money, you know, and teach them at a very young age how to take care of their finances and be responsible that way. Because what we're seeing right now is a catastrophe. You know, it's a result of communism taking place, right? Where they're telling kids, oh, you don't need to worry about any of that. You know, we're going to take care of you. You're going to be all right. And as you know, anytime the government tells you they're going to take care of you, you better start running.
Yeah. And it's a multi-generational plan, because the sad thing is I think so many of the parents don't know that now. So they don't even know what to tell their kids as far as finances or balancing a checkbook or, I mean, heck, yeah. If you got a lemonade stand, first you got to buy the product. Then mm-hmm. you got to pay your staff. Then you got to turn a profit from what you're selling. You know what I mean? It's not just a pipe dream where government's going to give me lemonades and I'm going to sell it. You know.
If you live in the state of California, you know, you're going to be giving a lot of your lemonade away to the state before you make any money. You know, so, but you got to know these things. You need to prepare for these things. I mean, I'm an optimist in the sense that I really believe that you can do whatever you want in this country. I really believe that. Even, you know, against the odds that we're facing today, I really believe that you can get ahead if you learn how to navigate your way through the system, you know. But it's not going to be that way for much longer. I think we're going to enter into an era now where, you know, communism, socialism, whatever you want to call it, you know, is so entrenched into our society, into our mechanisms, that we simply won't be able to do that. And that's what I'm afraid of. That's why we're fighting, is because I want to, you know, the American dream to stay alive. It sounds so cliche, but I'm a product of that. I'm a product of, you know, immigrant parents who had very little, you know, and was able to get ahead and make a life for myself and raise a family in this country. And that's something I'm very proud of. So that's something that we want to continue. I think when that American dream dies, then we have nothing else to live for. So.
And I think that's key. And I mean, for me, the first time I heard you was last August, I believe, at a city council meeting. And it was so amazing, primal. It was just what people needed to hear and were all thinking. And here in my state, I had Mark Robinson on a couple years ago who went on. And I think he's now lieutenant governor, I believe. But he had a similar situation to yours a few years back, where he's another entrepreneur, former Army, I believe, but just got up in front of the city council there in Greensboro and was addressing the gun laws and was saying, yo, we're not giving our stuff in. We're not turning anything in. Just forget about it. And thankfully, now he's lieutenant governor in this state. I'd say probably the only smart person in office, perhaps, in North Carolina. But awesome. And I think it really resonated with me and so many people what you were saying at that city council meeting.
Well, I appreciate that, you know, and I didn't say anything that was super intellectual or innovative, you know. I think I simply said what was on the hearts and minds of the people, you know, at that point. And what I kind of felt was the mood in the room, if you will. And that was a county supervisor meeting there. And we have five county supervisors. And at that time, there's always been five, but one of them got beaten in the election by an ally of ours, by Patrick Jones. And that was a big win for us, you know, and what we're in now is this recall process where we need to recall three of these supervisors, you know, because we need a majority. Right now, we don't have a majority vote in our county board. And that's a problem for us because here's the deal. As you know, the whole country went through these lockdowns. You know, in California, we were shut down, locked down. They wanted to shut our businesses down. They wanted us to, you know, stay home and all these things. As we're starting to come out of that, people are really rapidly forgetting what was done, you know, and that's a problem. But we're facing now, we're trying to recall three supervisors, and people are saying, why are you trying to recall them? They got us through the pandemic. I'm like, no, they did not. We got ourselves through the pandemic. We got through despite what they did, we got through, not because of what they did. And, you know, not to hold hard feelings for the past, but, you know, we have to have a certain memory that tells us this can happen again. We can't go back to what happened, because if they can do it to us, then they're going to do it to us next year and the year after that, year after that. And every time it's going to be a new pandemic, a new virus, a new fungus, whatever they come up with next, you know. So this is the reason that we're deep into this fight right now, where we're not only recalling our governor here in California, but at the very local level, taking some responsibility for what happens. And we need to hold people accountable. That's simply what we're about. They've for too long run amok and operated with zero accountability from the people they represent. And, you know, I mean, it's really our fault. You know, this is the problem, is that we've never done anything about it. We've never been politically involved or participatory, because it's never really mattered. You know, it never mattered until they literally came to your business and told you, hey, you need to shut down. You know, so that just became way too reminiscent of the things that we read in history. And we said, we know where this goes. We need to stop it now. So we need to get rid of these people.
Well, what's it looking like out there where you're at on the ground as far as the recall goes? And then also just as far as a business owner, what this whole, I just call it a hoax, a scam, or whatever COVID debacle did in California, where you're at?
So for me, I stayed open the whole time. In the very beginning, I did. I did close for 2 weeks, used it to remodel the business, you know, to renovate. And then I was wide open, you know, and we made the news nationally for doing that. Whoever would have thought you'd make the news for simply opening your doors for your business, you know. But we fought pretty hard, you know, at the beginning. So I've been Shasta County. My business is in Tehama County, but the counties kind of go together. They're small rural counties, you know. So in Tehama County, they really wanted us to shut down, and then they wanted us to go under the governor's plan, the tier system. And once that happened, you know, it seemed like it was just this game of back and forth, you know, open, close. 1 week you're open, 1 week you're close. 1 week you can open, but you can only eat outside. And now, I mean, it just became so ridiculous to follow that I said, you know, to hell with it. We're just going to stay open as if nothing ever happened. My employees did not want to wear masks. I still haven't worn a mask, you know. And that's a whole other topic we can talk about, you know, what that mask signifies. But because I stayed open, I think that encouraged other businesses to do the same thing. Once they saw that they weren't really doing anything to me, that they were allowing me to just operate as usual, other businesses started to follow suit and do the same thing. And I think that's why we were able to maintain some sense of normalcy up here. You know, it's because we fought back and we said no. You know, I mean, the power of the word no is very underrated. I mean, if somebody comes to you and tells you shut your business down, you have an option to say, no, I'm not going to do that. What's the next step? You know, and if they really want to pursue the next step, that's going to cost them a lot of calories and they're not going to do it. So that was sort of my message. And I encouraged the business thing, and I did that. We're starting to get the sense of normalcy back probably sooner than the rest, way sooner than the rest of the state for sure. So.
Yeah, I think that's one of the key things that they keep going after these people for, is because they don't want us to get the idea that we're not crazy. They don't want everybody to figure out, like, hey, this is just a big freaking scam. So they don't want, you know, the gym owner in New Jersey, the latest guy salon in Florida, or yourself there in California. They don't want those people to actually figure out that they're not alone. I mean, I think a lot of this is kind of simplistic, but I look at it like high school or something. It's like the cool kids' lunch table and everybody else. And they want everybody to fit into that mold to sit at the cool kids' lunch table. And they don't want people going, hey, F the lunch table. We're just going to be doing our own thing over here. Forget
about it. Well, yeah, I mean, you social distance, right? Because if people get together, there's power in that, right? There's power in community. There's power in congregating, which they hate. They want to mask your face because they don't want to, you know, they don't want you to have an identity. They don't want you to forget what it's like to be human, you know? And this is all stuff that all my conspiracy theory friends have talked about for years, and I always call them crazy, and now it's come true, so they're not so crazy anymore. Or maybe we're all crazy. I don't know. But I will say that once these things start to materialize and realize in front of our eyes, we can no longer call them theories because it's happening. You know, and what they're doing to the children really, to me, is the reason that we're fighting the hardest, you know. Because we have to be able to raise healthy children who aren't masked, who are able to see smiles and facial expressions, able to learn the nonverbal communication that's so important, you know, in just getting through life. And we're taking that away from them. We're robbing them of an experience, which is really, I think, you know, our most inherent right, which is just to be children, right, to live free lives, especially here in America. So it's pretty interesting to me that there's still people today. There's still people today, how many months later, you know, 18, 19 months later, that are still wearing masks in their cars, you know. But what that does, Don, it tells you how strong that brainwashing is. That indoctrination is, I mean, they do a really good job. I'll have to give them credit, you know.
Yeah, I almost kind of make a game out of it when we're driving somewhere. It's kind of a I'll try to be nice, but let's find the idiot game. Like, look, there's somebody with two masks on in the car by themselves.
Oh, God,
I know. The other day, there was a lady with a mask on in the car, and a guy next to her smoking, all windows up and everything. I'm going, man, do you not see how dumb this is? Come on.
You can't make this stuff up, man. You know, you can't make it up. And it's – I'd like to think I'm not really surprised by anything, but I'd be lying. I mean, I'm absolutely shocked at how gullible the American people are. You know, and like I said, it's not for the past, it's for the future. So what are they going to do next? You know, I mean, if people bought this, this is a test, you know, this is really a test. And to me, I mean, we can get into the vaccine and that to me really is the weapon, right? To me, that's population control. That's what they've been talking about for decades. Bill Gates has been preaching population control for decades now, you know, and he has the money to fund this whole thing, along with the Soros and the other globalists, you know. I don't know how, you know, dark we want to get on the show, but I'm telling you, that rabbit hole is deep. And, you know, I think in 6 months to a year, we're going to see people getting really, really sick from this vaccine. So,
yeah, I mean, that's the dark side of all this. I mean, we talked about tough conversations with the family and kids a little earlier, and this has probably been a year of tough conversations for me anyway. Do you call everybody an idiot, which is kind of my mindset, but you don't want to tell a kid that. Or, you know, you try to tell them what's going on without saying the whole world's nuts. But I think that's going to be a really bad conversation that so many of us are going to have sooner when you got relatives, friends, and so forth dying or getting really sick because of this vaccine. I mean, then it's going to be, well, I don't even know what to say. It's kind of survival of the fittest in action. I mean, that's a cold fact, but I don't know. It's pretty bad.
I mean, and I hate to be so calloused, you know, in the way that I verbalize what I'm thinking, but I'm telling you that you make stupid decisions, you know, you're going to pay stupid consequences. And I'm sorry, but why would you get a vaccine, which is not even a vaccine, and 99.8% survivability rate, you know, so you're going to put something into your body for something that you're probably going to survive. And listen, I mean, it's sad when somebody dies from COVID. And I think there are people that have died, even some maybe without pre-existing conditions, you know, but this is going to happen every year. We cannot shut down a country. We cannot, you know, tank an economy because of something that's just naturally going to happen every year anyway. And again, I don't want to sound callous. I don't want to sound like I don't care. I value life very, very much. You know, it's very sad when that happens. But at the end of the day, there's things that we can do to prevent us from getting sick. You know, I mean, there's vitamins and supplements and minerals, and we just don't take care of ourselves the way that people used to. You know, our food is depleted of the nutrition that we need nowadays. You know, I mean, if you really want to take care of people, get rid of fast food. And then listen, I love fast food every so often, so I really hope that doesn't happen. But let's educate people on, you know, on what's actually going to make you sick, you know, and it's not, you know, a novel virus. It's going to be heart disease. It's going to be cancers. It's going to be, you know, depression and things as such, you know, hormonal imbalances, you know, that lead to other diseases, all because people just simply don't take care of themselves. They don't exercise enough. They don't get outside enough. They don't eat right. They don't, you know, take the right vitamins and minerals. And that's really important to do. So if we teach people that from an early age, I think we're going to have a much healthier society, which is going to lead to all kinds of, you know, prosperous situations, you know, because we're just going to have healthier people. Healthier people are smarter people. Smarter people are more successful people. And we know this.
And it's kind of funny, but not so much that, and it's kind of be maybe a stretch for some people. I was listening to something by Dave Chappelle the other day, and he was saying one of the worst things they can say about you is that you're crazy, because it's dismissive of who you are, what you represent, and everything else. And that's what they've done with this conspiracy label, the anti-vaxxer label, the anti-science. I mean, so many of these stupid mantras they throw out there at us. But it's dismissive, and it kind of puts, whether it's there or not, this sort of scarlet letter on you. So your friends that might not know this stuff, or some guy you see at a gas station that you went to high school, whatever it is, they're going to say, oh, well, you're the crazy guy that doesn't do X, Y, or Z.
You know, that word is really powerful. That word to me is almost like racist. You know? It's a conversation stopper. It totally, you're right. I mean, it kind of degrades any bit of intelligence somebody might have, you know. And I watched this video one time, and I can't remember what it was about. It might have even been like a flat earth thing. I'm not saying I'm a flat earther or not. You know, I mean, that's kind of crazy. That's a crazy topic we could probably get into at some point. But they were talking about conditioning in this video. They said that the number one way that you condition people to believe what you believe is to call the other side crazy, you know, and to convince people that the other side is crazy, that they're just intellectually, you know, malfunctioned, if you will. And you're right. That's a label you'll never, you know, you'll never outlive that label, you know.
And I think that's what plays into the conditioning of so many people, because there's been extended family members, you know, 6 months ago, I said, yo, don't ever take the vaccine. I got into the science. I gave them a brief rundown.
Yeah,
they did it anyway, two or three weeks back. And I'm kind of, shrugging off. Like, what do you say? I told you the facts. I told you, you know, if you pull the trigger on this gun and aim it at your leg, the bullet's going to come out and you're just going to make a big hole in your leg and you're going to bleed out.
Yeah. And, you know, again, they're going to have to make those decisions for themselves. And I try to be respectful, you know, but at the same time, at what point do we draw a line and say, look, you're being an idiot, you know, and then you're being an even bigger idiot if you're taking your children with you to do this. You got to vaccinate yourself, kill yourself. But when you do that to your kids, that's child abuse, you know, and that's one thing I just can't stand. You know, that's one thing that really will make me pick a fight with somebody. So, and listen, we're in this fight, you know, and people need to understand what this is, whether you know it or not, whether you like it or not. We are in a war right now. We're in a war for our identity. I think culturally as a country, we're in a war for our values. We're in a war for our freedom. And if we're not banging that drum right now, you know, we're going to fall asleep and wake up and realize that we're in a whole nother world, you know, that we don't want to be in, that we don't want to live in. And we're quickly approaching that. You know, this is not like our grandparents' generation where they had some time, you know, and they could have maybe stopped it then. We're living in a time right now. Things are happening in real time. Again, because of this tool and weapon right here, everything happens in real time. Everything happens much faster than it ever would have happened before, because the information channels are just so fast. I mean, literally everything happens right now. So we're seeing this fast forward, you know, where our grandparents and parents have some time. We're seeing it fast forward for us, where we're in it. I mean, communism is on us right now, you know, and we're seeing things from the leftist playbook that have played out in other countries. If we want to know what America is going to look like next year, look at Venezuela, look at Colombia, look what's happened in Peru. So Peru just had, you know, elections, you know, that looked a lot like what happened here, you know, and we could talk about the election being stolen here. Now we know that was the case. And the same thing happened there, you know, where Fujimori was ahead, you know, all through the day. And then all of a sudden that night, you know, the next morning, You have this leftist, Maoist, Marxist teacher who all sends ahead in the polls. How does that happen? I don't know, but it's a globalist thing. It isn't unique to the United States. And the fact that it's not unique to the United States should tell us that, you know what, we need to follow what's going on around the globe, because that's going to tell us exactly what we're going to be here in the very near future. And yet, you know, people still preach socialism. They still preach communism. You know, they preach these leftist agendas that really lead to slavery. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, you know. So I don't know. I'm like I said, I'm a very optimistic person because I believe in our ability to fight for those that are on our side. But at the same time, I mean, it's pretty daunting when you start looking at the facts of what's happening and how fast it's happening.
Yeah, I've said it again and again, if people want to see what's coming, just look at what's happened in communist Russia, communist China, all these different totalitarian regimes of the last century or more. That's what's the playbook for here. So it's not a surprise that they did away with history and called it social studies. I mean, that's what it was called when I was in school, I believe, was social studies. We're going to social studies class. And sadly, I didn't learn exactly a heck of a lot of history. I had to relearn a lot of stuff.
I know. And it's a great social experiment. It's not only social studies. It's a social experiment that's permeated its way now even into our military, which has always been a pretty conservative contingent of our society. And now, I mean, our military is a joke, you know, and this isn't to disrespect or degrade anybody's service to this country, you know, but I'm telling you that I wouldn't want my son or daughter to serve in today's military, you know. I wouldn't serve in today's military, sure as hell no, because it is a social experiment. It's run by leftists. Individuals, people being promoted through the ranks, or people who are going to bang the company drum and hold the company line. And it's just simply not a place where patriotism and constitutionality is being taught anymore. You know, so, and that's a problem. I mean, this is really a matter of national security now, you know, where I don't know how we're going to protect ourselves. I mean, you know, we have a reason anymore to protect ourselves, you know. At this point, with people that are in charge, and it's very sad. I watched this video a couple of weeks ago now. It literally made me sick. It made me want to vomit, you know. And you might have seen it. It was going around. It was a TikTok video that was comparing the Russian military commercial with the
American the recruitment video.
I don't know if you saw that one. Now. Oh yeah, and you see the Russians, you know, and they're doing push-ups and now they're shooting. They're firing their weapons in the snow, you know. It's like hard individuals. And then you have the American Army, you know, who's a girl talking about how she was raised by two moms and she's been a freedom fighter her whole life. And then it's all kind of cutesy and cartoony. And I'm like, dude, what are we doing here? You know, what have we become? And meanwhile, China and Russia are sitting back just laughing their asses off at us. You know, I mean, they're literally falling out of their chairs, you know, laughing at the joke that we've become. So I don't know. How do we get out of it now? I don't know. I really believe that the warrior culture has shifted now from the military into, you know, what I call the civilian ranks, you know, people like us who are out here fighting on what I call the front lines of the real important ideological war now.
That's definitely something I've talked about recently. It's probably quite polarizing for everybody, but we heard the, I think, representative from Tennessee come out after the January 6th events and say, well, we're going to vet out the military, specifically the folks going to D.C., the true sign of a banana republic. We got the military at our capital. We got gun turrets and barbed wire at our capital. But I've said this for a while, not to besmirch the people that are the good people in the police and military. But, again, look at that history book.
Militarized.
Who is the people that took out the folks in China and Russia and Nazi Germany? They didn't farm it out to some foreign country. Like, Mao didn't get Australians to come take the Chinese people. Yeah. We got the police and military to take them. Hitler didn't get the Poles to take out the Jews. He got police and military. So, I mean, unfortunately, we got some bad apples in the bunch there, and I don't know what we're going to do about it. I'm like you. I don't know.
We're so lucky up here where we live where – you know, I'd say most of the law enforcement individuals were just fantastic patriots, you know, who I hate saying on our side because, you know, I hate the our side versus their side, but they're good constitutional patriots that at the end of the day, I think would fight with us and not against us, you know, and I'm very proud to be friends with so many law enforcement agents and police officers, you know, who just do the fantastic work of policing our streets and you know, keeping our counties safe. So I never want to besmirch, you know, what they do. I mean, it's very important. But you're right. I mean, left to their own devices, you know, and I'm not talking about the law enforcement individuals. I'm talking about, you know, the powers that be left to their own devices. They would use them as tools to turn against us. So, and I don't know, that's a question that's been tossed around a lot in our circles. You know, it's like, man, if stuff really went down, you know, would they be with us or against us? I guess we'll find out. But I tend to think that in these rural areas, I think a lot of law enforcement individuals are constitutional patriots. So,
and that's one thing I really love about your docuseries, if you will, the Red, White, and Blueprint. One thing I really love about it is that you put just everyday people in there, which is, I mean, me too. I'm just an everyday guy. I don't have any special powers or anything. But I think so many times the people on our side of the fence tend to look at Trump or General Flynn or these other big name, high profile, they call them influencers now. Sure. And I'm like, yeah, that's good. But at the same time, it is the guy that runs a barbershop. It is the guy who who's a janitor. I mean, it's that everyday man that can stand up just as they did in the 1776 era. And they weren't all George Washington's out there. He was a wonderful guy, don't get me wrong. But there was a lot of folks out there that were just in the Black Robe Regiment. They were teachers. They were
Black Robes,
cotton and so forth.
Yeah, and if you ever get a chance, and I hope you will, have Woody Clendenin on your show. You know, he's a barber here in Cottonwood, the Cottonwood Barber. If you really want to know what's going on in the county, you're going to go to the barber shop. You're going to go to Woody's barber shop. You're going to sit in there for 45 minutes, listen to everybody talk, and you'll know exactly what's happening. You know, and these are smart individuals. These are people that have been keeping their ear to the ground for a long time. And Woody is also the leader of the Cottonwood Militia, which is, you know, the largest militia actually in California now. And, you know, this is something that needs to get talked about, because people ask us, how come you guys have been able to do what you're doing? Well, number one, I think it's our spirit, our what I call our Western spirit, you know, our pioneer spirit, that said, you know, well, enough of this. We're not going to follow along. We're going to do what we know how to do, which is work hard, make a living, raise our families, and continue to live our normal lives, you know. But why were we able to do that? We're able to do that because we have a militia. We have a militia of people who are doing great things, constitutional things, things to keep our schools open, things to keep businesses open, things to keep kids safe. And so when people hear the word militia, they have a picture, they conjure up a picture in their head of something they saw on TV. Now they think the Unabomber, they think, Oklahoma City, you know, they think McVeigh and these kinds of people, because it's mischaracterized by the media. You know, the militia is guys like you, guys like me, you know, it's your baseball coach, it's your teacher, it's your doctor, it's just normal individuals who live in a community who simply want to uphold the Constitution and know that if stuff ever went awry, that we'd be able to band together to protect our freedoms. And that's really it. You know, and we work with law enforcement, not against them. You know, and this is important for people to understand, is that we are not here to fight against good citizens. We're here to fight tyranny if we have to, you know. So I hope that you have Woody speaks to it so much better. He's been doing this for much longer than I have, you know, and just a very intelligent, very, really just one of the most respected men in our community. You know, somebody who has been doing this for much longer than I have, has been really laying the groundwork for this movement for a long time. So.
Well, what really got you to start doing this docuseries? Because I love it. I've seen the first three anyway. I'm not sure if the fourth one's out quite yet or not. But yeah, I just love the message, and I love the hope in it. Like you said, you're a positive guy, and I love that you're bringing more than just we're all screwed. I sometimes just tend to say we're just all screwed, but I love it that there's hope somewhere.
And I tend to say that sometimes as well, you know, but it's always going to be followed up with a message of hope, because I never want to feel hopeless. I think if there's something that makes us unique as Americans, is the fact that we always maintain a level of hope, a level of, you know, positivity in our lives, in our spirit. And that's what gets us to where we want to be. But the docuseries was born out of a group of guys that started to get together. You know, this is back in probably October, November of last year. You know, there's some people that seek me out and said, hey, Carlos, we'd like to meet with you, have a couple of beers and talk about what's going on. Because at this point, everybody was kind of frightened about what was happening, especially in California. And so I said, yeah, let's start, you know, let's get together. So we got together over a couple of beers, and it kind of became a weekly routine where we'd get together and we'd talk and we'd sort of all, you know, make a plan. Hey, if stuff goes down, here's our contingency plan. Here's what we're going to do. Meet at Carl's house. They're going to make sure that the families are safe. And because at that point, I mean, it was kind of scary. We didn't know if there's going to be food shortages and, you know, fuel shortages. We didn't know what was going to happen. Well, out of that group, you know, there's a gentleman, good friend of mine now, Jeremy Edwardson, you know, who said, hey, you know what, we should do a documentary. We should document everything that's going on here. And we were thinking about names. He said, well, red, because we started calling it the blueprint. And then one of the guys says, hey, how about the red, white, and blueprint?
Nice.
And I said, you know, that is great because it ties in our patriotism with an idea of a blueprint or a guidebook that's going to be replicatable, duplicatable for other communities that are counties to follow. And that's sort of where it started, you know. So we started to follow the recall process. We started to follow this process of holding leaders accountable, started to follow this process of electing leaders that are constitutional and using the mechanisms that are you know, within our reach to use. And it's really been a cool experience. I mean, this has been one of the coolest experiences in my life to be part of this team. We have such an awesome team of professionals. I mean, if you see the videography, you know, and this stuff, and the music is all original music that we actually recorded in the studio. You know, it's just really, really cool stuff. You know, and I hope people appreciate that because the quality of work that's going in is quality of work. That's the quality of work that's going into the documentary is the same quality of work that's going into this process of recalling and holding our leaders accountable, you know. And these are determined people, smart people. The left doesn't get all smart people, contrary to popular belief, you know, just because they're, you know, college educated in this academia we talked about earlier doesn't mean that they have the guts or the will to fight like we have, you know, or even the intelligence to fight the way we do. So, no, it's all really exciting stuff. So, yeah, the first three episodes are out. We also have a podcast as well, Red, White, Blueprint podcast, you know, which we do a couple of episodes a week there. So that's on YouTube. You can look at it. I think there's like 6 or 7 episodes out now for that. So,
man, that sounds amazing. I can't believe YouTube still got it on there. YouTube took down, I think, 3 of my old episodes in about 50 minutes this past week.
Yeah,
they were like,
I don't know, so
a year ago. So
yeah, in our podcast, you know, it's pretty tame. We talked about doing another podcast that's less restricted, you know, less tame. But we sort of have to stay between the lines, stay on message, you know, but stay between the lines just to make sure that we stay on there, you know, on YouTube. Because at some point, you kind of have to play the game, if you will. If you want to get your message out, you can't keep getting kicked off, you know. So we figured that would be our tame version of ourselves, or you know, something that everybody can listen to and, you know, hopefully not get kicked off. So
yeah, that's true. I think for me the buzzword is COVID. So if I mention COVID at all, they don't like that on YouTube. So
yeah, they don't. You know, in social media, God, there is an absolute war being waged by the other side right now on social media. I was, you know, scrolling through yesterday and I was like, dude, it seemed like every other swipe was some kind of a COVID message, you know, and it was some advertisement of how, you know, my name is whatever, you know, and I just got vaccinated. My name is whatever. And I just got vaccinated. And it's like, holy smokes, man. They want you to think everybody's vaccinated now, you know. And it was funny. I saw one ad where it had a guy in a Carhartt hat, Carhartt shirt, you know, kind of appealing to the working man, you know, to the blue collar man. And said, hey, I just got vaccinated. I'm like, this is such bullshit. Yeah, you're going to be able to see right through this stuff, you know. It's sad. But people buy into it. You know, people look at that and say, hey, you know, let's go line up. Where do I get my shot? You know, peer pressure, I guess.
Well, that's what's so ridiculous here now is they've got these signs on the door that are, you know, reminiscent of segregation era where they have, if you've been vaccinated, you can come in without a mask. So, I mean, I ignore all that now because it's all – theater. I mean, it's always been security theater, but now, sure, you know, they haven't made you show your papers yet. I'm sure as soon as we get into fall, we'll be into some sort of Stasi show your papers.
And I've already heard of people that are going to, you know, carry fraudulent paperwork, you know, people that'll, you know, play the game, I guess, you know. I don't even want to do that. I don't even want to show fake papers, you know. No. If you require me to show anything, I'll tell you to screw yourself. I'm going home or going somewhere else, but I'm not doing it. You know, I'm not playing the game. You know, it's just not in my nature, I think. And I think it hurts us. If we start to play that game and we start to create fraudulent documents, you know, we start to carry fake papers around, I think that hurts our cause. I think our cause needs to be, hey, we're not doing this. The word is no. You can go back where you came from because we're going to continue to live our lives normally.
I'm so glad that your business is one of those that's standing apart. And I think we just need more and more people just like yourself that are business owners that are saying, forget about it. You don't need the stupid mask. You can put a sign on the door that says no mask required or no mask period. No. You know, it's hysterical almost that we've resorted into dressing like cops and robbers, even to go in banks and stuff now. I mean, that's just so asinine.
Who would have thought, right? Who would have thought that wearing a mask into a bank would be required? I mean, I used to get you thrown in jail. I know, right? Yeah, but this is how ridiculous we've got, where nothing makes common sense anymore. You know, we're just at a rodeo down in Bishop, California for the California high school finals. And I went to one restaurant with my son to have breakfast, and, you know, they required a mask. Obviously, we didn't wear one. You know, the lady was nice enough. She sat us down. But as I'm watching people come in, one of the managers here at the restaurant was asking people for their mask, and people would say, no, I don't have one. And he said, well, okay, well, just put your nose in your shirt and walk to your table. Like, literally, people walking like this, put their nose in their shirt to their table, as if that's going to keep you medically safe from anything, you know? It's just – but we've lost our common sense. I mean, it's been more – it's become more important now just to follow and obey than it has to actually use our brains, you know? And people don't care. I mean, I guarantee you that manager can't medically tell me why this, you know, is going to help me at all, you know? But to him, it's just about being obedient, being compliant. That's the word I hate, the compliance word, right? I mean, they're more concerned with being compliant than they are with being smart.
And I think this is really going to affect so many people that are in positions. I mean, kind of like myself, but I know you had a lady on the first episode, Courtney Kreider. She was on there. And she's one of those people that lost her job. And this is a year ago, I believe. So I think we're going to see so much more of that, where you see people that are not compliant.
And I think there was a gal on Fox, on one of the Fox channels today, I don't know if you saw the news, you know, who ended up being a whistleblower and saying on the air a couple of days ago. I don't know if you saw that, where she said something along the lines of, hey, Fox is trying to muzzle me. Yeah. You know, there's things that they're trying to keep from the people, you know. And of course, this morning we just found out that she got fired, you know, and that's going to happen more and more. I think these people at the end of the day, good people, are still going to have a sense of morality. They're going to have a sense of integrity, and they're going to say, hey, you know what? You know, enough's enough. You know, I'm not going to lie to my fellow Americans. I'm not going to, you know, continue to, you know, perpetuate this narrative, this agenda. You know, I'm going to stand up. And like you said, there's power in numbers, and it feels pretty good, you know, when people like us talk, and I'm like, oh, man, there's a guy in North Carolina that thinks like I think. And then there's a guy in Georgia, and then there's a guy in Penn, and then there's a community here. And now there's full counties, you know, that are behind us. And this gives us a lot of encouragement, a lot of power in our movement to know that there's other people that are with us and that we're not crazy. Because you have to question yourself sometimes, right? I think if you're an honest person, I mean, if you're introspective at all, you look at me, man, am I crazy? I think you have to ask yourself that at least once a day, right? And I think the answer is, yeah, maybe sometimes. I mean, it might be a little bit intense in my approach, but at the end of the day, we're not crazy, you know? We are simply doing something that should have been done a long time ago, frankly. You know, we kind of wait until it's maybe a little bit too late to be as aggressive as we're being now, you know. But our founding fathers knew this day would come. You know, they wrote such a fantastic document. I was having a conversation last night with a friend talking about what geniuses our founding fathers were and how we should honor that kind of a genius, you know, because they wrote a document that was so forecasting of what was going to happen. You know, it was just perfect. It was written for such a time as this.
And that's what's so insidious. I'll kind of link both of these in with the cult of academia, because you see more and more now they have these different universities that are requiring vaccines, or they're requiring an additional fee if you don't take the vaccine. We're talking the COVID garbage right now, but I mean, yeah, they're doing this. But also these are those same indoctrination centers that are just telling you how bad all these founding fathers were. Well, Thomas Jefferson had slaves, and well, whoever, George Washington, he didn't do the right thing here, and so on, forth and so on. All these people have all been besmirched by the cult of academia.
I read an article yesterday. No, I'm sorry. I read an article yesterday, to your point, about a North Korean gal, you know, a defector that came here to the United States and went to, I think it was Columbia, actually, that she went to. And she said, "Now, what I'm seeing here is exactly what was happening in North Korea. They're erasing history. They're erasing literature now at this point. They're controlling what you listen to, what you read, what you see." And she's like, "Now, this is no different than what was happening in North Korea. And in a way, it's worse because we had freedom. We had, you know, such a bastion for principle and for liberty. And now we've completely just, you know, shittered away, you know." And it was really eye-opening for that account, you know, to read that account for me yesterday, you know, that somebody from North Korea would say, "Man, this is exactly what," because we don't think of North Korea, right? We think, "Man, we might become like Colombia or Venezuela, but we'll never be North Korea," you know?
Yeah.
But here we are having a North Korean student say, "Hey, you know what? We're in a lot of ways worse than the North Korea was, so, or is." And it's all American hatred. You know, that's what she talked about. She talked about these professors now who are preaching, you know, American hate, vilifying the American. And that's a problem for me. That's something that I take personally. You know, people say, "Oh, this is not a, you know, politics shouldn't be personal." I say, that's bullshit. I mean, it's very personal. You know? Yeah, it should be the most personal thing. And in the Republic, every person should be participatory in the political process, you know. And this is the problem, is that people say, "Oh, I don't want to talk about politics." Well, politics is your life. Politics dictates, you know, how your kids are going to live, how your grandkids are going to live, you know. So I say to those people, you know, quit being lazy. It's such a cop-out, you know. It's crap. I mean, get off the couch, you know. And I don't care, you know, if you're tired of fighting. I don't care if, you know, it's too difficult and too confrontational. You know, and this is a problem with society today. Nobody wants to be confrontational anymore. Nobody's willing to stand up for what they believe because nobody wants to offend anybody, right? I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Well, guess what? You know, we have to be willing to hurt some feelings to get what we want. And, you know, sadly, I think we're, you know, I don't want to say that we're too far gone because I wouldn't be in this fight if I thought that. But we have a really long fight ahead of us.
I hate that cop-out statement, too. You hear that all the time. You don't want to talk religion and politics. And I always say, well, what do you want to talk about? Because I don't want to talk about the game. I don't care what Netflix show you're watching. I mean, everything circles into those two elements to me because your gas prices are going up. Your food prices are going up. That's all related to politics.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, they'll sit there and they'll bitch about gas prices. You know, I'm like, okay, what got you there? What got us there? Those gas prices just – didn't arbitrarily go up because gas stations decided to charge you more. You know, there's a reason for this, you know. And the coin term that's getting thrown around now is Biden's America, right? And Biden's America is not America at all, you know. And this Biden's America is a scary, scary son of a gun. And I'll tell you, I mean, I don't know about you. I can't find people that actually will tell me Biden's doing a good job. I'm yet to find anybody, you know. And I don't know if it's because I don't run in those circles. I don't know, but I'm online. I mean, I have friends from Biden's America is not America at all. You know, I mean, this is it's a very scary thing if we really start to look at this. And I'm yet to find somebody to defend Biden. You know, I'm yet to find somebody who defends, you know, President Biden at this point. You know, and I hate to even call him that, you know, but it's a joke, you know. So where is all this stuff coming from? You know, there's a machine out there. There's a globalist machine at work out there, you know, and they're very effective. They're even efficient, you know, and we have a very long battle ahead of us, a very long war. It's going to be an ideological war. It's going to be a cultural war. It's going to be fought, you know, on the information highways and hopefully not fought in the streets, you know. But if the time comes, I think, you know, people need to prepare for that as well. It's not something we want. I've been mischaracterized as a domestic terrorist, as somebody that wants to incite violence. And that's the last thing I would want. I would never want my kids to have to witness that, to witness war. I would never want, you know, my family to have to go through that, to endure that, you know. But at the same time, I don't want my family to live in tyranny either. So if that's the only mechanism that we are left with at some point, then we have to fight, you know, and I'm hoping that all good Americans will fight with us.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. It is a culture war. I think that's exactly what this whole thing boils down to. And, you know, what you're doing, what I'm doing, what everybody else sort of similar to us is doing is trying to instill upon their progeny, their culture that, hey, this is our culture. We don't have to follow the leader off the cliff with Biden and Harris. We don't have to wear the slave shackle like the sheep out there and walk around like this, you know. Yeah, so we're – at the very least, we're presenting a better alternative. So I think eventually, you know, it's that hearts and minds thing. I think eventually people are going to go, man, why am I wearing the slave shackle and paying $8 a gallon for gas? Oh, I know. Yeah, it's that guy in the White House.
This is the battle for the hearts and minds of our children. And we need to remember that, you know. It's about the children. At the end of the day, you know, we'll be long gone, you know, at some point, you know, but it's what our children, our grandchildren, that's our legacy. And to me, that's everything, you know. And I think our founding fathers at this point would be rolling over their graves seeing what we did with this experiment that they handed to us, you know. So, again, I've been saying this all along, you know, we're not too far gone. You know, it might seem like we are. We're pretty deep in this shit, but I think we can work our way out of it, you know, if we're smart. So
we got to keep into that, man. Well, what's the best place for people to go to find the podcast, the Red, White, Blue docuseries,
you go to YouTube,
or just find out where to go to your restaurant even?
Yeah, so just do a simple YouTube search for Red, White, Blueprint, you know, episodes or – the podcast, it'll pop up on there. You can go to Red, White, Blueprint on Facebook as well. Instagram, Red, White, Blueprint on Instagram. You can follow me on Carlos Zapata Patriot on Instagram. I'm on Facebook as well, but it's kind of a weird format. I'm at Instagram, Carlos Zapata Patriot. You can follow me on there, Red, White, Blueprint. I don't tweet much. I think I have an account on there, but it went from like 14,000 followers to 8,000 followers overnight. You know, so Twitter took a bunch of that. And once they did that, you know, once they kicked, you know, Donald Trump off and they started to take our followers away, I said, to hell, I'm not going to play that game. So, but yeah, social media is a great thing. It can be a very positive thing. It can be a way for us to move the football up the field, but it can also be a way to destroy ourselves. So I would say let's be very careful with what we say and how we use that, you know.
That sounds good, man. Well, if you'll stick around for about 5 seconds, I'll wrap things up and talk to you at the end here.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet. Well, yet another wonderful episode. Thanks so much for our great guest, Carlos Zapata, for being with us today. As always, say you can't do everything, but you can do something. So get out there and do your part. Until next time, I'll be seeing you sooner than later in the Anomic Age.
Thank you for listening to The Anomic Age, a John Age project. For past shows, further info, and to comment, go to AnomicAge.com. That's AnomicAge.com. Till next time, thank you for listening to The Anomic Age. I'm going to go to the next one.